Could I tell you a little bit about Satan? That in the court of heaven, Satan is the district attorney. He is not as Christians imagine, the enemy of heaven and the enemy of mankind. He's merely the person who sees the bad side of things and carries out the dirty work.
Something that I find repulsive about, especially monotheistic messianic religion. With a large part of itself, it quite clearly wants us all to die.
A new consciousness is developing which sees the earth as a single organism and recognizes that an organism at war with itself is doomed.
Welcome to Deferred Gnosis. We live in a world of Gnosis Deferred. The primary purpose of Deferred Gnosis is to bring together contrasting perspectives that relentlessly investigate the whys and wherefores most aren't willing to explore.
We will grasp those fleeting eternal truths necessary to liberate us from the shackles of sedentary belief. We will sharpen reason against the whetstone of radical thought.
On this episode of Deferred Gnosis Podcast, we have the sincere privilege of welcoming several members of the Chiatal Church, a subversive and creative political movement, and Luis Fleischauer, an artist in his own right. Each one of the artists here are independently infamous for their blend of performance art, music, and ritualistic cultural engineering.
So for listeners who may be unfamiliar, we'd like to extend the opportunity to each of the artists here to kind of individually introduce yourselves. Maybe we'll start with Stephen Leyba.
All right. Yes, I am Reverend Stephen Johnson Leyba. I was assimilated into the Church of Satan in the 90s, 1992. LaVey made me a priest. I had sent him some of my artwork in art school, and we met. And since then, I have grown as a Satanist, and now I'm an uber-Satanist and post-Satanist, and I started the Chiatal Church. And Genesis Peorage made me a Magus, so now in Magus Adam, he's not here today, he made me, so now I guess my title is Reverend Magist Lord Leyba. That's who I am.
Maybe triple Magus, even.
Yes, and I'm a Renaissance man. I write, I direct movies, I paint. I make a living mostly from painting, and I fucking put curses on people that deserve it, especially corporations like Monsanto and Nestle. And other occult people are apologists, and they're very Christian-y, and they go, well, I'm not going to put a curse on the baby rapist because I don't want it to come back on me. Well, it's going to come back on you if you do not put a curse. And LaVey was like that. You're morally, and people hate that word, morally obligated to put justice in the world, and if I went around just killing people, it's so banal. It's much better to curse them and let them fall at their own demise.
Well, you can murder someone symbolically far before physically.
Oh, yes. My death resume is pretty good. My curse resume is pretty good. So, yeah.
And Hannah?
Yes, hello. I am Magus Hannah Haddix. My background is, well, I was introduced in the weird world of magic and the occult and the artistic freaks of the world. At a very young, ripe age, I moved into the Geist Institute, which is a Brooklyn brownstone commune owned previously by Genesis Peorage and her late wife, Lady J. Rest in peace. Hail. I traveled the world of Psychic TV. I was a former member. Became a Magus of the Chiatal Church last year in May, right after we did a death curse on Monsanto. Yep. And I have been traveling around with Stephen Johnson Leyba ever since, putting courses in corporations and fighting stillborn culture.
Art war.
Hail.
Fantastic.
Janelle?
My name is Janelle Mestima. I've been, I started performing with Aesthetic Meat Front 2009 and joined Constructs of Ritual Evolution in 2010 and formed my own project called Virgo Rising. I really enjoy experimental performance art, and my goal is always to provoke the audience and their imaginations and kind of try to open their eyes and let them know that mundane everyday life doesn't have to be everyday life and your fantasies and your desires, and you can really do anything you like, and there really are no rules in this world. And I just hope to inspire people to follow their hearts and their dreams. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'd like to thank Louis Fleischhauer and Stephen Labor are my mentors, and have been the wind beneath my wings.
What an honor.
Sweetie. Yeah, my name is Louis Fleischhauer. I started EMF back then as Aesthetic Meat Foundation, and now it's Aesthetic Meat Front in 1996. And before then, I was doing performance, ritualistic performance art since 1993. And my main goal about my art is to create a raw primal energy, because we live in a society where this has been taken away from us. And in order to evolve, we need to be first returned to what we are. And that is raw primal energy that creates us. I also have a label called AMF Corsets, where I make wearable art. Started in roughly about the same time as the rest of AMF. And I'm going to be joining Labor next Saturday with the Nestle Death Curse.
Okay, excellent. It's a privilege to have you guys here. Thank you for being in the studio today. I think the most important, and we should cover it just up front, the most imminent concern is the Nestle Death Curse that you guys will be performing next Saturday, the 17th, at Lethal Amounts.
Yes.
And you bill it as an exhibition of ritual artifact paintings and a blood, chocolate, and water ritual performance to shield California from Nestle's theft of water and a death curse on the Swiss company Nestle. Now, before we go into like the everything behind Nestle and the whole death curse that you want to do, let's I want to maybe go into the Monsanto one first to maybe give kind of some historicity, to kind of give an idea of how this has evolved and why it's switching to Nestle. So I did have the privilege of seeing the Monsanto Death Curse event at Black Castle.
Excellent, yeah.
Yeah, that was a few years ago, maybe? A
couple years ago.
Yeah. So, and what was the impetus for that? What was the genesis of that idea, and ultimately the purpose of that work?
Well, I decided to get healthy and eat more vegetables because I was getting kind of like I'm getting older. I need to eat better, so I started eating more vegetables, and I got sick. And then I found out about genetically modified vegetables, fruits, and vegetables and food. And I looked into it a lot. I didn't know. I mean, I heard of Monsanto and GMOs because I've been following the whole genetic science thing, and I've always been fascinated by that. But I'm like, so I started painting this in my trapezoid book, and I was like, I'm getting sick. It's like, I'm trying to eat healthy. And so I was researching it, and it was at a time, 2010, people didn't know what Monsanto was, and now it's a household word. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't know what GMOs were. Now people are more conscious of that. But so the first one was in 2010, was in Montreal, and I did a bed-in, and I dressed in a white suit. It was kind of like a homage to John Lennon and Yoko Ono, and it was for, you know, the whole food war. And I sent a press release, and I got a response from Monsanto, and they said, well, you're very hostile to us. You know, good luck with your show, but we can't be there.
And so this preface the Monsanto death curse. I mean, you were almost inviting them or letting them know, like, this is why we're doing this kind of thing.
Yeah, and we...
Would you like to send a PR representative, maybe?
Yeah, that's what I did. And then they tried to shame me with corporate science.
And they denied even having Terminator seeds. And
yeah, they said that I invented the Terminator seed. And a Terminator seed is like, it's like, I guess that's the you know, in Terminator public seed. Usage okay. term of seeds that you know, they'd only work once and you have to buy seeds again. They don't make seeds to...
So the crops that they create aren't fertile. You can't make another... There's no...
Oh, second generation.
This is to maximize. Right. This is to maximize productivity or maximize
Sales of seeds.
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then they started suing farmers because there's, you know, the seeds that they planted would go into other farmers.
Because of the wind, natural causes, and then they would go in and say, you actually have our patented corporate seeds, and so we're going to sue you and take your farm.
Patented seeds that blew in from the wind.
Exactly.
Onto somebody else's property that they had.
It's absurd.
That is
how much of the, and I feel like you guys would probably be familiar with this, how much influence and share does Monsanto have on the farming industry in the United States? I mean, we're not even talking about internationally, but let's just say the United States for now.
Oh, it's massive. More insidious than you think. They run the USDA.
So Obama appointed the head of, or somebody high up in the corporate chain of Monsanto as the head of the FDA, which is absolutely absurd because Monsanto does not give a fuck about the health or the safety of the people who are consuming their products. It's all about profit. It's all about...
And this is in light of some of the media exposure that Monsanto had already received at this point. Right, I mean, they had already, because I remember that event when he appointed this particular person in his cabinet. I mean, the Monsanto had already been a buzzword at that point.
Sure.
So this is despite that, even or in spite of it, actually.
So basically, you're looking at when I did the curse, Monsanto wasn't really known, and then if you look at 2010 till now, it's gotten so Fellini-esque and so surreal that. You know, we talk about this and people don't believe it. Like, for instance, Obama, like, you know, the primary ingredient in Roundup Ready, which was the Monsanto's cash cow, is the glyphosate. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right, but it's in our groundwater. So Obama made it so they could basically pollute more of the world with the glyphosate. But meanwhile, there are super weeds and it doesn't work. So the corporate science solution with Monsanto now is they have created plants that are Agent Orange, like resilient.
Yes.
So Obama said that
Roundup Ready
use
crops.
Agent Orange now again. So they're using Agent Orange. They're using DDT because their herbicides, insecticide plants, GMOs don't work. And they're the most hated corporation in the world, and now they're looking to change their name. So
yeah, they're kind of the quintessential bad guy right now.
Absolutely.
They're kind of like if you're okay with almost everything going else in society, every bit of legislation or policy that's taking place, Monsanto is almost like it's okay to hate Monsanto. Like that seems to be the sentiment. Mm-hmm. So maybe a product of the curse itself. I know in the performance I saw, there was some suspension art that Janelle, you were involved with.
Yes.
And that seemed to be a massive undertaking. I remember there was like broken glass or that you were kind of for the entirety of the evening. And then at some point you were suspended like, I don't know, like 10, 15 feet in the air. And was there what was the symbolism behind that and how did that play a part in the imagery, the ritual imagery involved in that?
When I work with labor, I always feel like I'm kind of the altar in a way, like the flesh
you
altar.
Yeah, your actual altar.
I'm a very internal person. I think, like, I don't know, I believe in, like, you know, the power of the mind and things like that. So, you know, I might not be so vocal about things, but I'm a visual artist, and I back everything, you know, anything that has to do with taking away or fucking with people's basic rights and things like that. I'm a child of the welfare state, so and I have really strong feelings about injustice, you know, against the little guys. And when I perform with Leyba, I always feel like a flesh altar, and I'm kind of the medium for the intentions. And for the last anti-Monsanto show, I meditated on glass for 2 hours, and I suffered a lot in that show. It was probably the most intense show I've ever been a part of. It's extremely painful. But after the show, stocks began falling and people were taking a lot more notice. And I like to think that we helped.
Absolutely.
I remember there was a certain pulse in that performance. I mean, you had a very, you had a mix. You had a blend of people that came to that performance. Metalheads. I mean, it's the Black Hassle. So you had metalheads. You had people into black metal, and you had people into your work or your work, Janelle or Steven. And, mm-hmm. and were you?
No, I was in Berlin.
Okay. Yeah. All right. All right. but I noticed, like, at some point in the, there was a bit of kind of seeing everything that was going on with the performance. There's, you know, whatever, nudity, and then there was the toilet with the, like, the toilet altar the with altar. The Monsanto, like, vegetables and stuff.
Yep.
And I noticed at first people were kind of had this giddiness to it, maybe a little bit of cynicism, possibly, but shortly in, I think 10, 15 minutes in, I saw this almost, I don't know, dare I say, like, spiritual, or almost like it became like a religious
meeting.
Yeah, people
actually cried.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The mood instantly shifted. So it was almost as if some, you know, we're working with some very potent imagery and energy, you know, at that point.
On the positive side, when Janelle was made a Magus, we made an homage to, like, true soy plant, you know, as an animistic, you know, being, living
sure.
being, not as an entity.
Sure, sure.
So she's the keeper of true soy and not the Roundup Ready endotoxin Monsanto product.
An animism true to indigenous spirituality.
Yeah, especially on this continent, the indigenous tribes of North America didn't have deities. They sure. saw everything connected, rocks, plants, everything. That's, you know, like,
no externalized gods as you see in the Western philosophy and spirituality.
So they're very much touched with the land, touched with themselves, and what they were actually doing. So Janelle is very much in touch with that. You know, I might go on about, like, the politics and this and
sure,
that and
sure,
the
sure.
curses and stuff, but the positive side is the whole paying respects to actual living beings. And in the Nestle curse, we're doing an intro for water, and then we're doing an homage to the cacao plant, to the plant that makes chocolate, and we're asking it to help us curse Nestle. So we're very much aware of the positive aspect, but we also actually believe in the curses and balance.
Excellent. So as far as to move to the Nestle death curse, what was the initial inspiration for that performance, and what is kind of everyone's role in putting that together?
Well, something that really stood out to us was when the CEO of Nestle said that he didn't believe that water should be a human right and that it should be privatized. And then hearing about how Nestle is pumping absurd amounts of water from the ground in California, even though you are experiencing
a
crazy drought here.
Oh, no. They're experiencing denial because
it's
a water
crisis.
NASA declared the end of California in a year ago.
State of emergency.
This is where the water war starts. This is like the corporate takeover of the world is happening, and California is the testing ground.
So Leva also has been talking about the water wars for years now.
I've been having like 8 years of dreams of floods and droughts at the same time.
Well, this has been an imminent concern. There's been a bit of apocalypticism surrounding the idea of running out of water. That's been one of the veins of it, and there's absolute truth to that. I mean, clean water is becoming more and more a critical and crucial resource
the groundwater is depleted in the valley and most of California. Mm-hmm. And if you look at, like, NASA had a satellite maps, and it was like California, the Central Valley, no groundwater. So they're drilling thousands of feet into water that's like over 5,000 year old. And California, like the ground is sinking, mm-hmm. you were saying, because the groundwater is gone. It cannot be replaced. It could rain in California for 40 years and 40 nights, and it will not be replaced. And people, I want to slap people when I say drought. Like, I'm going to punch people. Like, another Jack Daniels, and I'm going to punch the next person who says drought.
We'll get the
state
soon.
Of emergency.
Yeah. Right.
So everyone's part in the everyone here is participating in the death curse event.
Yes.
Yeah.
So kind of if we can kind of get a rundown of what you plan without exposing too much. I mean, but what kind of everyone's role may be in that performance and what we're ultimately trying to do, the effects of that.
Specifically, Hannah and I are cursing to death CEOs and their families of Nestle. And I just tagged on Jerry Brown because he said not everybody is entitled to the same amount of water.
Right.
So it's getting, like, really ugly.
We just want to remind people and make them aware that you know, behind these evil corporations that are destroying the planet and the inhabitants of it, that these people have names and faces and you know, they're living individuals, and they They are hiding behind this mask of, like, this limited liability corporation, and we have to take them down, because they're responsible for these things. They're the policymakers. They're the ones who are turning a blind eye to the suffering of the child slaves during the chocolate, you know, process, or, you know, going to these third world countries and convincing mothers that the Nestle formula is healthier than their breast milk. And it's just perpetuating a world full of, like, nipple deprived sociopaths. And
yeah, that's the next generation coming up. That's what we're up against.
Yeah.
Oh, it's already a phenomenon that when you look at a page on the internet where there's a nipple cut out, it is normal to, you know. I remember when I first saw it on MySpace, I was like, "Whoa, that's kind of creepy." You know?
Is that a fucking mannequin? What the fuck is that?
Yeah, it's a breast without a nipple. And now it's normal.
Is that a person? Is that what people look like? I haven't seen anybody with their fucking shirt off.
The reality is far worse than what we're saying, because the next generation, and where we do the body modification in blood, the young people are having their nipples actually removed in real time, for real.
Oh, yeah, I find that's that.
A symptom of the times.
I think that would freak me out.
I'm not.
I think it's a good statement against censorship that if you use it.
If you're going to censor my nipples, I might as well just fucking cut them off. Yeah. I don't need them. I'm not using them.
So, total proponent of the Free the Nipple campaign.
Absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
I am a warrior in the Free the Nipple campaign. I actually, I've been put in Facebook jail so many times because of my nipples. And I decided that I should probably just cut them off and send them to the headquarters of Facebook, because, you know.
We can sew them on the eyes of the CEO of Nestle.
Going back to the what you're doing next Saturday.
Oh, that's
yes,
right.
Yes.
I'm going to make an altar to the Saint Poison, which is sponsored by Nestle. And afterwards, we're doing a ritual to invoke primordial energy, because the idea is primordial energy is an antidote to the system that we are stuck in right now. Because everything is ruled by numbers, and it's a very, there's an obsession with order currently in humanity going on. But if you look at the biggest crimes, they have not been done by chaos, but by order, like fascism or corporate fascism.
Yeah,
now
by the state.
It's which is all order. We live in square buildings, in square cars. Nothing is organic anymore.
Sure.
And in nature, and we are a part of it, if we deny it or not, we are part of nature.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. There is no such thing as order. Everything is organic and chaos. Mm. There's not a double of anything.
So this seems to be a running current or motive in a lot of your work, actually. Mm-hmm. So what you're contributing to this particular performance, like what you just said now, this runs in line with some of the impetus for a lot of the art projects that you've had prior to this. But coming back to one of the statements you made, this idea that nothing is any longer organic, is it safe to say, or is it a possibility that some of the behaviors of humans, some of the ways that we treat each other in the world itself, is this us hearkening back to the nature that we're somehow bound to? So are some of these acts that we're doing, and this is a question for everyone here, are some of these acts that we're doing, so with nature comes the good and the bad that comes with that. There's a balance. You know, there's an idea that most animals don't destroy the environment they live in,
Beavers.
Right?
Yeah, I think it's a self-hatred. The reason why we destroy the environment, it's an unconscious self-hatred. Mm. Because we are part of the environment. It's our source of life.
Yes.
And we either destroy it or we watch it being destroyed without doing anything. But and as a collective being, I mean, the individual, there are definitely individuals who do something against it. But humanity as a whole doesn't do enough.
Yeah, and part of that is its love of mammoth of money, but you know, we're not against that, and it's a disrespect of gold, which is true value, and gold is as one of the symbols we're using in the ritual, and the Cairo church has a saying, gold bless you. And when we're pissed off, we say gold damn it.
So is this a the whole reference to gold, obviously You mentioned yourself being a Satanist. I mean, you've been a Satanist.
Hail Satan.
Yeah. So, hail Satan, Ave Satanas. So there's been a, that's been a current in your work for the majority, for the span of your work. That's been at the forefront, this idea of satanic adversarial expression.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And in that, you know, LaVey mentioned gold representing the heavenly and the holy, and this is undeniable. Like in our religious traditions.
And I've had issues. I've never worn gold. I've had issues with it because of that. And being mostly Native American, the whole, you know, killing indigenous tribes for gold.
Sure.
But now with Hannah and a lot of the Kyotalists, I've looked at gold as a positive thing. Because in America, the whole thing, a lot of people don't like the fact that we're criticizing and cursing corporations, because the attitude in America is like, oh, if you're against the corporations, then you're against my right to be a billionaire, and you're a hippie, you're against money. I'm like, no, we're into like true value. Gold does not tarnish, it does not rust, it does not diminish. Mm-hmm. We're into riches of this earth as a Satanist, but we believe it should be political and there should be battles, where it's like Satanism now, it used to be they called themselves the productive elite, but since Peter Gilmore has been calling the idiot show, the shit show, it's the elite and not the productive elite, because you don't have to be productive, and all the productive people have left.
Yeah,
we're trying to get the gold to flow back to the people.
Okay.
Instead of being hoarded by these corporate masses who have, since the day we were born, we've all been indoctrinated with these societal conditionings, and nature is wrong, and you should be ashamed of your body, and this is how you should live, and this is who you should be. And, you know, gold is a part of the control, but we believe that it needs to be reversed. The flow of the gold needs to be spread out, and people will then be freed from the prisons that gold creates, because it's only in the hands of the very few. If we redistribute it, then it will no longer have the control, because there's no hierarchy. There's no ladders to climb and things that you can't have. Gold is material. Kyotl, personally, I believe that the riches are within, and finding your true creative nature and creating and expressing, that is the true gold.
Which is art war.
Which is art.
And art war is going back to the productive elite. The elite, the people, should be creative. Not everybody's an artist, but everybody should create.
Okay.
So we have a death culture that produces and mass produces products of death and around death, but we deny death. But Kyotl is art war, be creative, use art to create, create your own way. Mm-hmm.
So naturally that kind of addresses a part of my next question, which is the behind this Nestle death curse and the Monsanto curse, the Kyotl Church, I kind of wanted to know what was the kind of genesis of that idea, what led to that, how did that evolve from you, Stephen, and then how everyone else's participation in that project develop. You kind of mentioned some ideas behind Kyotl, what Kyotl means. Hannah, you did as well. So what that represents as an art movement, art war. So let's dig a little bit deeper into that. As far as the Kyotl Church, what's the intention of it? What kind of engineered the formation of it, and where do you plan to go with it?
So it's like Genesis says, social engineering.
Cultural engineering, yes.
And by Genesis, you mean Genesis Pure Age from
Genesis.
So that meaning cultural engineering is not buying whatever product or whatever celebrity, whatever is like, you know, trending or whatever. It's about actively being involved in the culture creatively. And if there's any kind of hierarchy, it's with what you create, not what you destroy and how much money you make. It's like, what do you do when you're alive? How do you contribute to the human history rather than diminish it? So we're into not playing like we're better than anybody else, but we're playing deeper and harder, and we're gonna call people to the mat.
It's about inspiring creativity in others and helping people realize that the most therapeutic and powerful and intimate and consciousness expanding thing you can do is to express yourself creatively. We have an art war movement where we are calling out stillborn culture and stillborn art, these things that have, these images that we all see that are just put out there again and again, and it's nothing new. It's allowing for this zombie culture to just live and breed off of shit that has already existed. What we're about evolution and creating new ways and new ways of thinking and new ways of being and new ways of knowing yourself.
Human evolution.
So there seems to be a return to kind of bringing value to art, and actually maybe even making the assessment of what is good art.
That's a big taboo.
Or bad art. Those artists that may be listening, and I'm sure a lot of them are subversive anyway, but for those artists that are listening, it could be argued that the creative process rests in some things that don't have a political motivation. They don't have a transformative or transgressive motivation. Where's the line that you draw to decide what is an aspect of what you call art war? What is the intention to change, to transform the culture around us, and what isn't?
Bottom line is creating a platform where there is a debate. And there is a whole, like the whole political correct things. When LaVey made me a priest, he loved that I was like Native American and I was in public criticizing Christianity, and I could get away with it because it wasn't politically correct to like attack a Native American.
When did you meet LaVey? Actually, I mean, you met him shortly before his death, or
in 1990.
Oh wow! Like, so
I had a good 7 years.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I moved to New York, and I'd go to San Francisco, back to San Francisco for the summers, and he'd play music. We'd talk politics, and a lot of people call him a charlatan, and they call me a charlatan, and they're like, oh, they're just trying to get attention, they're just trying to shock. It's like America is a culture of shock. There's like political terms and movements. The media is shock. We have substance and content. We want to have debates about real things, deep things that actually affect your life. I don't care what entertainment you're buying. What does it do for you? And how do you take it to the next level? How do you contribute to the human experience? You know, so it's like there is bad art. So me making a true art list and my first movie, What is Art? I got more death threats than anything that I ever have done in Satanism because I was making
pretty much personal accusations. I mean, that's a pretty personal thing to be. You know.
I'm like, okay,
no,
this is what I call true art. Yeah. Like, oh, you're a fascist. Right. How dare you? Sure. How could you? I'm like, who are you to like make a definition of like what real art is? I'm an artist. And like this whole political correct thing where you're supposed to shut up and be pretty in the arts because the museums and the galleries and the art system, they're the people that make the whole definition
people
and the
need to
language
realize
around
that
art.
There's definitely a line. There's a difference between a creation and art. We all have the ability to create, and through our creative nature, that's how we find our true selves. But that does not mean that everything that you produce is actual art. Art inspires. Art confuses and confounds. Art changes cultures, you know. Art makes people cry and make people angry and art makes
and
people
think.
React.
So go back to what Shay was asking. What is your definition of stillborn art?
Stillborn art is the
this. Oh, it's so. This table is so.
Stillborn art is what decor. I see in advertisements. Yeah. Stillborn art are these images that are put out into the world that are only feeding into the idea of control and cultural control. Stillborn art is something that keeps you in this weird mirage of not knowing yourself and not being comfortable with your being and what products to buy and how you should behave.
For me, stillborn art would be art that is aimed to please.
Mm. Yeah, that's
which
awesome.
Is
yeah.
actually just decoration.
I like that term because stillborn kind of harkens or references the idea that art is sacred, almost like birth is unanimously considered a sacred act. Even amongst
Marks, pollution.
Yeah. So the idea of stillborn, meaning that there was a sacred, maybe even holy. I don't know if I could even use that
or
word
just
in
vital,
this room.
Living.
But but it's stillborn in the sense that there was something holy in the essence of the act itself. But at some point, It became dead to its influence.
Yes.
Right? So in a somewhat related note, kind of discussing the intentions behind there, I see some similarity to the work of Louise. I think that some of your previous work to the to what's happening with the Coyote Church. I wanted to kind of touch on that because I feel like your work touches and it's clear why you would participate and why you would all collaborate on a similar level because I see some similarities with
the we are definitely kindred spirits.
Absolutely. And I see you have a manifesto on your site, and I wanted to read a part of that, and then I wanted you to kind of comment and go from there, and then we can go into a bit of it. Mm-hmm. But you say, nothing separates us further from ourselves than the neurotic need for order and control. We fear the unknown, the unpredictable, anything that is even closely related to the primal forces of chaos. We hide away in a system entirely built upon order. We sacrificed our sense of wonder. We lost our magic. We have no more creative food for our minds. We are hiding behind square screens, living in square rooms, inside square buildings. All of this is in direct contrast to our own nature, for we are organic creatures. Our consciousness, which has endless possibilities, is chained to a system governed by numbers. Numbers are an instrument of control. We calculate everything. We even think in numbers. But we do not feel the energies around and within us. The world screams in pain, but we only save our banks. Kneeling at the altar of the economy, we sacrifice this earth, bleed it, try and burn it as a feast for the gods that ride our paychecks. So I think that that's almost a perfect kind of afterthought to everything that has kind of been discussed.
Absolutely.
So far. And everything that's taking place with the Monsanto and Nestle death curse with the Coyote Church. So I want you to kind of expand on that and give your own kind of assessment of it and some of your prior work that you might want to get deeper into.
Going back to this, especially the end, we live in an age where the new religion is the economy. We worship it, and it is just like any religion. It gives you the idea of being immortal. Otherwise, we would not sacrifice anything we need, like water or pollute the earth. Those are all real things. But if we can save the economy, meaning saving a little bit of money, we go to polluting this. So on a subconscious level, I think there is the idea of that the economy is a higher being that we all have to sacrifice ourselves to.
Okay, I think as far as the AMF, the mm-hmm. Aesthetic Meat Front, is concerned, there seems to be an element of transhumanism. You see, there seems to be almost like your implementation of technology, suspension, body mm-hmm. modification. Yeah. You seem to comment on technology in a ritualistic manner.
Mm. The idea...
What are your thoughts on transhumanism? Some of us believe that there's an inevitable move towards that as a species, maybe even our saving grace. What are your thoughts on that? Maybe even the dark sides of technology. How do you think that's developing?
Well, right now, we're definitely using technology the wrong way because we use it to make things easier for us, which is, at certain moments, a good thing. But on a evolutionary way, it sends us in the wrong direction. Because if you look 100 years ago, how the human body used to look, and now, and if you
look... some clear changes taking
place. Yeah, and definitely not for the better. And if you look at the way people used to be able to spell or remember phone numbers...
Sure.
Or even calculate in your head. Nobody calculates even the easiest things in the head anymore. Those are all exercises for the brain, which been taken away from us. And
Google will help us.
Yeah, exactly. driving without
Google is the way.
Even back and forth to the same place. We used to remember this by our instincts. Sure. Now we look at our phone.
Mm-hmm. So you see a negative impact
Is it all negative?
On that development?
Yeah, I mean, in this direction, it's definitely negative. I think there are definitely ways that we could use those technologies to train our body and to train our mind so they would become sharper rather than duller, but you're not doing it.
Yeah, Stephen talked about animism and the idea of a, dare I say, divine connection in, or a divine element or spirit to plants and the earth itself.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like technology is an extension of this animistic quality? So that is to say that as default, mm-hmm. in a neutral sense, is technology this natural extension of our development, our connection to, and our, our connection to nature itself that we are unable to really remove ourselves from, no matter how hard we try?
I'm not so sure about it. I mean, it is definitely, it came to us naturally. But as it is right now, it is doing more the opposite. It's taking us more away from it. And it's doing it in such a damaging way that I have a hard time seeing it as a natural extension of nature.
Sure. Because it's scripted.
Yeah.
What about the element of
intention?
But I think if we look at technology and use it organically, if you look at nature and then at technology, rather than at comfort and then at technology, then there might be a way to have more organic technologies and...
Well, young people are ashamed if they use it the wrong way and if they don't have iPhones.
Yeah.
Like I graduated from a high school in Arkansas. There was 300 people, but now young people have this oppression of the internet, of millions of people, if they have the wrong phone, if they use technology in the wrong way. So it's like the language is controlled, like the language around art and technology is controlled.
Yeah, philosophers like, for example, Alexander Bard talked about the idea through his Synthism movement, the idea that the internet is an aspect of a created God. So, and some elements of Satanism talks about that, a created God.
I can see that.
The internet being an aspect of a transhumanistic or futurist culture, where we are a global mind connected by the internet, and the internet representing God in a sense that
Howard Bloom, global mind.
It's an aspect of perhaps the culmination of all human thoughts, emotions, desires, intentions,
But if your intention is given to you in a script, it's not an intention. So it's about being present and using the technology in your own way, not in a scripted way, not what the celebrities tell you or the corporations tell you what to do with
it. The internet can be a powerful tool, but unless you're going out into flesh world, as I like to call it, and acting.
Flesh world? A much better way of saying IRL,
yes,
right?
Flesh, exactly.
A much cooler way of saying IRL.
So you must take, use the internet as your tool, do as the Westerners do, let Google be your guru, right? But one must actually do something with the worlds that you experience and the people that you meet across the world wide web.
But the thing is, with the internet, it had great potential, but now it has become 90% Facebook and other censored networks. So it's actually, instead of unlimited thought and expression that we can put into it, it's becoming more and more limited and more focused on what they're trying to sell you.
Truly.
So in this state, it's even more damaging.
To segue slightly, I wanted to go in, and this runs true with every one of your work, independently and communally, together. There seems to be a spiritual element, or a psycho-political psychodrama involved in the ritual performance art that all of you do. And I wanted to get your individual opinions on that, because we've discussed that on the podcast. There is the idea that things are spiritual or supernatural. Some Satanists would call it supernormal, as LaVey would have labeled it. Do you believe, so with these death curses, and I'll start with Leyva and we'll go around the table and get everyone's view on this. But Stephen, starting with you, I mean, do you see that these death curses have something outside of established science that is actually influencing culture beyond merely understood psychology? So are we actually shifting the culture in a way that transcends currently understood science?
Absolutely. You know, they used to speak of winning the hearts and the minds of the people. Now it's like manipulating everybody. What we're doing is forcing a dialogue. You don't have to agree with us. I don't care if you agree with me, but you're pissed off by what I'm saying right after the fact that you said that art doesn't matter and it doesn't affect anybody. And we're pushing the envelope and calling everybody to the mat, even ourselves. It's something very vital and very alive. You say spiritual, and I think vital, vital sure. living being. That's spirituality to me. Like spirituality is like, I love the word, but it's like a corrupted word also. And our use of language is problematic. So it's like forcing vital culture, good and bad. And people are like, oh, that's negative, or you're not going to make any money. We're going to make money. We're going to lose money. You're going to lose money. You're going to lose face. We're going to look like fucking ridiculous, but we're going to kick your fucking ass.
Do you believe that the Monsanto death curse had an effect beyond those who were immediately exposed to it?
In other words,
are you asking if there's a supernatural effect?
Supernatural effect took place with the performance art that was performing? And I'm talking beyond like the secular idea that we have a performance and those who witness it are going to see the symbolism and it's going to dig into their subconscious and psychology will take place and there's going to be a shift in those who view it.
Absolutely.
So it's beyond that, though. We're talking about something beyond that.
It's the unknown. It's the unknown factor. It's like in physics, it's the quantum. It's the influence of the observer turning a particle or
the twin slit paradox.
Yeah.
It's, the idea it's that consciousness like, can affect how something resolves.
Which is very North American, indigenous, like animism. You have your emotions. You don't have to believe it on a supernatural level. You don't even have to believe in quantum physics. It's like you have this energy and your brain shoots out electricity and you're going, shit's fucked up. I'm going to speak my mind and not go along with the program. So it has an effect. And I think that, because I think we're all connected, it influences other people.
Absolutely.
So other people have thought about Monsanto and they're like, it's mostly a bad idea.
It sends ripples not only through the people who experience it, but, you know, as ritual magicians, we believe that our intent and our action and the ability that we have with our passion to change the world is very real. And we're creating these ritual spaces. This isn't just a show. This isn't just a performance. This is an actual ritual.
This isn't just a passive.
And it's not just a mere psychodrama.
Not a mere psychodrama.
And it's not just about the people. We do these rituals in private often. We've already cursed Nestle without an audience.
Sure.
And it's art war. It's magical warfare. And we are creating these spaces, and we are calling upon beings, you know, like Kali and Algol. Like there are certain entities that I use personally during these curses, because these entities, whether you believe that they have any actual physical or real presence in the world, the understandings and the archetypes behind them give them life and give them power, and you can call upon them.
Or just the physicality of Janelle and Luis giving blood, and physically it's like an unspoken influence on the human experience has an effect and various effects on various levels.
Just to kind of get a little bit of maybe your background, because you spoke a lot of – you kind of expounded or further detailed the concept behind it. I see you have a universal hexagram tattoo. Where do you fall? I mean, not to appeal to labels, but where do you fall as far as the occult tradition? Is there a Thelemite, left hand path?
So the thing is, I am a being who likes to expose myself to all thoughts and all theologies, and I make my own toolbox. I'm not into isms. I'm not into labeling myself. You know, yes, I have these symbols and sigils tattooed on my body, and other people will see this and say, oh, you're a Thelemite.
Follower.
But
follower.
But that's not my...
Gotcha. I got you, Peg.
I already know what you're in.
I don't like
Book
the
of law. That's where we go.
Yeah. Yeah. I know your name.
Rules.
People see these things and they think they can sum me up, but actually I don't prescribe to any other... I am influenced and inspired and enriched by other people's ideas, but my religion is me. my creation, my power and my understanding, sure. and you know.
Yeah, and that falls kind of in line with the satanic paradigm.
The left-hand path.
The left-hand path, quite for sure. Left-hand. Of course, yeah. So, Janelle, I mean, what's your view on... Because I've noticed with you, at least in the performances I've seen, it seems like you naturally fall into this spiritual aspect. And I use spiritual. Leyva kind of gave a disclaimer to that word. But I want to reclaim it. I'm going to reclaim it tonight, okay. Actually, in our conversation. And you seem to fall into that role naturally. I mean, I've seen, like I said, I saw in your performance, it seems extremely visceral, extremely personal, extremely painful and liberating. Yeah. So it seems like this kind of expression is at home with you. So what's your view towards, do you believe that you're not only affecting yourself internally, and some would argue if we change ourselves, we change the world, but that with notwithstanding, do you believe that some of the efforts you put ritualistically in these performances are changing the world beyond the casual notions of psychology or anything else? Is this kind of something that's going beyond the normal range of what we understand to be science or well understood science?
Yeah, of course. I don't know. I try to reach people on a different level, on a more emotional level. I mean, I very much relate or want to affect more of the people that aren't, you know, the audience to this show or our direct audience are a little bit more thoughtful. And there's a lot of people out there that live lives that are very limited and they're just worried about making a living and getting a third job because they can't pay their bills. And those are the people that, like, I really hope to reach. Sometimes I come from a neighborhood that, you know, part of me wants to be kind of...
Are you an Angelino?
I am.
You grew up in Los Angeles.
I'm from Boyle Heights.
Okay. Fantastic.
I'm very proud of that. Excellent. And I come from a neighborhood that's very poor, and we all kind of, as different as I always was, I was always accepted by my peers, and because we all had the same struggle.
Sure.
And I think that their lifestyles break my heart, because they just could never see anything beyond the struggle. And I hated that. I always hated that. And, you know, I always kept in touch with everybody. And I think people can relate to me. And even as weird as I've ever been or whatever visually, I like to create visuals that are grotesque and weird and crazy. That's my aesthetic. I love it. But I want to affect people in a way where they can't look away. They can see the beauty in it and maybe provoke their minds a little bit. And if there's some kind of activism behind it, maybe they can think a little bit harder about what there is to life. You know, it's not just about making rent and things that there's,
sure.
I don't know. There's just a bigger goal. Like I want to affect the people that just, their thoughts just don't go beyond a certain point. They don't go beyond society. Like there's so much more to life.
Sure.
And I just hope to show them that there is more and there's more possibilities and they don't have to be stuck in the shitty lives that they live.
Okay. And because we're in Southern California recording this now, and because my story, I feel like I resonate personally with your story. I grew up in a similar area in Los Angeles. And I'm wondering, for those listening who grew up in similar situations or who grew up in economically impoverished, kind of, upbringing, what was the trigger that served as the impetus for you to actually approach life in this extremely adversarial, and a lot of our listeners would probably agree with that terming, but this adversarial, this oppositional, what someone sees as oppositional form of expression, the left-hand path, the satanic imagery, the kind of what some would call dark artistic ritual elements. What triggered all of that for you?
At first, it was the Catholic Church. I became a Satanist. I became a Satanist in Sunday school. By the time I made my first communion, I was absolutely against
everything they taught me. You're ready to do your first black mass, actually.
Yeah, exactly. But more than that, it was the LAUSD, our education system in my neighborhood, and a lot of low-income neighborhoods is absolutely horrid.
Sure.
And I cannot stand it. When 9/11 happened, so many recruiters attacked the schools in my neighborhood, and so many of my peers are dead. And
oh my God.
It just, I don't know, it just really drove me to just go beyond that and fight wars my own way. I believe in the power of the individual and art and creativity, And I think so many people are out of touch with who they are and what they're capable of. And if I can show them in my own fucked up weird way, just one person to break through and make a difference in their neighborhood, in their community, in their families, however, like, I will be at some kind of peace.
I don't think it's fucked up or weird to quite possibly 99% of the people listening to the show right now.
Oh, yeah. Now, not this audience.
Now, Janelle, I mean, talking from a Water War, California point of view, you told me the story of at the Black Castle in South L.A., mm-hmm. the water coming out of the taps was sludge, and you were humiliated
South
to take
LA,
a shower.
Inglewood.
In certain areas, there is discriminatory
can't get the water in your mouth.
Hierarchy of water. Jerry Brown, fuck you.
It's really bad. It's not only that. South L.A. is under a flight path, and it's known that the planes dump the leftover fuel over the neighborhood.
What?
You can see it on the streets.
Are you fucking serious?
The streets are grimy as hell from flight.
Let's
from
just
fuel.
Say that water will reach its own level, even if that level doesn't exist. So, Luis, what's your, considering your experience and you devoting your life to putting these type of ritualistic cultural engineering into play, what's your opinion on this? The question of supernatural versus supernormal versus psychodrama versus established science. Where is your take on the ritual elements that you implement in your projects and with the Kyle Church in general, this upcoming event?
When I do a public ritual, I'm doing an invocation of energy. I want to get into a trance-like state of mind, and I want to share this with the audience. Because the idea is that with every change, with every infection within the audience, each member can open the door to the collective consciousness.
By the collective unconsciousness, we're not merely speaking of like a Jungian construct. We're speaking of maybe... because the idea of the Jungian construct with this idea of the collective... You speak of the collective consciousness as in this... Maybe we talked about it... We kind of referred to it a little bit earlier, the idea of the collective... the global mind.
Yeah.
So you mean affecting the zeitgeist.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
But not just the zeitgeist, also the, also in a Jungian kind of way that we are all connected without knowing it. And for me, it really makes no difference if it is spiritual or if it is because there is some scientific explanation that we haven't discovered yet.
Of course.
The result is the same.
So an expanded form of agnosticism.
Yes.
Levian agnosticism, maybe in a sense, because LeVay talked about that. This is science that hasn't been invented yet.
Yes.
So you have a musical release that you're going to have at the Nestle Death Curse performance event. I want to maybe go into that. I'm going to play a track here called The Seven Ways of Coyote. And then I'll like your ideas following that.
One, do not trust those that do not create. Those that buy their creativity from the media, the advertiser, the corporation, the church, or the state. Put all resources in those that promote and propagate your personal creativity. Two, nothing can be more powerful than one's imagination. It is your instinct and right. Never doubt this. Three, use your power of creativity against the power and authority of complacence. They have waged a war on you, and they will continue to enslave you with it if you remain passive. Four, the only power is the power of creating. We all can create because we're all the creator. Always create. Five. We become a civilization fueled by logic and consumption of consumer goods, and in the process we have sacrificed our instincts, our ability to trust ourselves, and our ability to create. We must find our way back. We must create our way forward. Six. The age of reason has lost its purpose, and our ability to create has been discouraged, trivialized, suppressed, and stolen from us. We can no longer listen or trust the people of authority that tell us our creativity is childish, impractical, insignificant, and unnecessary. Make a mockery of them and always laugh. Humor can create. Humor will destroy. And number 7. These people of authority confuse their positions with power, but only the power they have is the power we give them. Turn your back on them and create your own way.
Seven Ways of Coyote basically just explains what we're about, and it's about your creating your own future and living a creative life and being active in your life rather than following the scripted life which most people in the world follow. So Records Ad Nauseam is putting out the first Coyote Church recording, and it's Total Coyote Art War, hashtag Art War. And it's a brew of very interesting people with very interesting past. The person that mixed a lot of the recordings on the album was David Wright from Not Breathing. He's a noise musician that toured with Genesis Peorage.
It's really creepy stuff.
But you also have Project 9, which you worked United Satanic Apache Front. In your previous recordings, you worked with Project 9 quite a bit as well, right?
I worked for years with my band, USAF, United Satanic Apache Front, when I did a lot of the early blood stuff in the 90s, when nobody was doing any blood ritual performances.
And the J.D. Whiskey, right?
The Apache Whiskey, right?
Of course.
My first curse still.
We can't do a labor interview. I'm sorry. I don't want to appeal to every other interview you've probably experienced, but...
The only disclaimer...
And we have Jack Daniels in the studio tonight. Just to say that we're being as official as possible.
I'm drinking Jack Daniels.
Ritual Elements, right? We're talking about ritual elements.
And so apparently I only drink Jack Daniels when I'm in California. But the only disclaimer is I don't like sports, and particularly like football.
I don't think anyone here... It's safe to say, I don't even know much of you personally, but I think it's safe to hear that none of us really care.
I'm a hockey fan, I'm sorry.
Shame.
They're so sexy, true rebel. I'm sorry.
In 1997, I was one of the first political performance artists to use blood in a political manner. The irony was, like, all the press, it was front page, New York Times, 1997, San Francisco. I'm in the top sex scandals of all time. I'm number 10, Apache Whiskey Riot.
When you realized that your audience was not going to be immediately receptive, and maybe this may be a completely ignorant question to ask someone the likes of Steven Johnson Leyva, but when you realized that your audience wasn't quite going to be receptive to this event, did you... That probably agitated you a little bit. I mean, in a sense, that probably inspired you.
I did it for $400. And why did I do it? It wasn't for the money. I had a captured audience, a literally captured political audience, because it was a political consultant's birthday, and there was the DA, the sheriff, the mayor of San Francisco. They could not leave.
The 49ers and members of the 49ers.
They could not leave before their political careers. And the 49ers had to stay there because they were working on an initiative for a stadium mall to be built in San Francisco.
You would make Lenny Bruce very proud.
Lenny Bruce is a Coyote saint.
You canonized him. You canonized him like last week or 2 weeks ago when Junipero Serra was going to be canonized. You decided to canonize Lenny Bruce instead. So to kind of segue in a bit and kind of go back to the core of the Coyote Church intention, I want you to go into, and I don't want you to reveal too much. I just want you to go into maybe some highlights of the Nestle Death Curse. Litany. Can I call it litany?
No, you can call it a litany. It's also a tribunal.
Let's do that.
All right.
And I want you to read a bit from it. So, Steven Johnson Leyva, poet, painter, performance artist. Go ahead.
Imagine I am the state of California. The defendant, Nestle Corporation, and its false corporate masters. You lie. You steal. You think you have all the power. You think you can destroy California with corporate warfare laws. Those are not laws. They are rules. Gravity is a law. You have a disdain for the laws of nature, yet you do not even follow the laws of man. Stop taking California's water. Period. California water is depleted. It is not a drought. It is a state of emergency. You have no right to take any more. It is an act of war. It is treason. You are guilty. I stand before you as the state of California. I am the judge, the executioner. Get out of my way. I'm the judge today and the executioner. You shall tarnish, rust, deplete, and die. Kyle stands before you, Nestle Subwormians, at your tribunal. We are California, the judge and the jury and the executioner. You are guilty.
We find you guilty.
Curse Nestle. You no longer stand. We can stand no more. Ah, Mikazar, Pizar, Pizar, Piat, Anzeta. Die, Nestle. In agony, your CEOs and their families fall ill and die in great agony, slow and fast death. Tozozeka, Anzeta. Nestle, die! Your products with lead poisoning, like the Romans you eat off your lead plates, delusions and failures, your insanity, and now, before us all, even in the mainstream, your corporate model is now the new death model. Die, Nestle! Your war against women. First, it was infant formula. In the 70s, you told the world's women breastfeeding was no longer necessary. You poisoned our babies and your corporate rights. Yet you claimed you did no wrong. Child slavery in the 21st century? What gives you the right to enslave children? Now water? Death! In all the ways to you, Nestle, death to all your mechanized subwormian chained to mammoth who do not see the true life and true gold. Die, Nestle, die! Nestle, die! Nestle, die! Die, Nestle, die! Die, Nestle, die! Die, Nestle, die! Nestle, die! Die, die, die! You'll go, you'll see, ah, sabah, ah, I mean, come on, dina, ah, smarai, piyan, ah, kassan, dee, kagan, kagan, ah, ah, well, falter, but... Truth, justice, wrath! Death to Nestle! Shemhat Farash! Hail Satan! Hail to the Golden State! Death to the state of disgrace of Nestle!
Okay. How powerful incantation.
I think that's almost, I don't even know if like a death curse event needs to take place. Because I think that's already, I think we already did the job.
Sealed the deal, didn't we?
That's it. No one's going to buy candy bars after this, actually.
Can't kill the dead horse.
And so that's a taste of what will be taking place next week at Lethal Amounts for the death curse event. So it seems to be that there's a satanic or left-hand path sentiment to the expression in pretty much all of your art forms. What is your opinion on the current kind of movement, namely the Satanic Temple, just because that's been something that's been in the limelight in the United States for the last year? I just want to kind of get what each of your take is and maybe a little bit of how you prescribe, because we have a lot of listeners that kind of appeal to Satanism, Luciferianism, the left-hand path. Yeah. So I want to know your take on that community as it stands now, if you even want to call it a community.
I'll go first because the person that actually started the whole Satanic Temple was a friend of mine that I met on 2006 when I had my falling out, when I was shunned and not excommunicated, but I'm in bad standing with the Church of Satan now. And he started the Satanic Temple. We had this discussion where Satanism should be political and create a political dialogue like LaVey did. And people, now that you can have same-sex marriage, people forget that LaVey did the first like same-sex marriage in San Francisco in the late 60s.
Sure. Fuck is yeah. it okay? So is evolution. It okay as we preface your sentiment towards this thing? Is it okay that we address your falling out with the COS?
Absolutely.
Okay. So From my memory, and I actually, I saw you perform at the pre-666 event. This was an event held in L.A. And
you,
then on
wait, you did?
Yeah. Yeah, I actually saw you there. I was
sorry.
I was inebriated.
You must have been drunker than me because that really sucked.
Yeah, no, I was not to date myself. I think I was like 20 at the time, and I had respect for. And we talked about it a little bit afterwards, and I remember you saying something like, "I think I really made some people think about their fucking positions." You know, after you did your performance, it was a very like because you know a lot of part of your performance to the 666 event, which was attended by a lot of Satanists, you kind of said that you kind of asked them, like, you know, do what you're told. At some point, the Satanic Bible even sounded like bullshit to me. Like, you really made, it seems like you really made an intention to kind of even touch the buttons of the Satan. And that seems to be in the conversation that we've had throughout the night. You seem to be willing to, even tie into those who consider themselves dissidents, you seem willing to dissect
the rule-abiding rebels. It comes down to dogma and vital culture. And even in the Satanic Bible, LaVey talks about, like, the things that liberated us in the past chain us and make us slaves in the future. And you know, my whole, like, body of work is about, like, vital culture and keeping it vital. And my criticism of Satanism is the same criticism of Native American culture because, sure, like, how it has been for centuries until now, before America, the United States, was culture adapted and it was vital and it changed. But when the colonists came here and the Christians came here, they're like, we need to catalog and like, we need to define this and we need to like represent tradition and anybody who's against tradition. So I'm a dislocated Indian and I'm a dislocated Satanist. I say vital culture above your dogmas. And they have to preserve the past, and that's their job. They're as archivists, like Peter Gilmore, to present the past and how it was. Mm-hmm. But LaVey did these political performance art that was radical, and art and politics, and that's what Kyotl Church is about. And everybody in Satanism has their allegiances, and I'm like, fuck you. I'm sure. Moving forward. I don't care if you hate me.
You expounded that because on the 666 event, arguably, this is one of the biggest events that took place for Satanism in America for the last 30 years. I mean, this was a big event, and you, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you came dressed in a white suit.
And you spoke to the
BBC radio and you told them, like, you know, LaVey wouldn't have been okay with this. You know, he would have had an issue. You know, we're supposed to create our own churches and things like that. And you got criticism from other Satanists because they thought that you were being over the top and that you weren't respecting the church. And they said that, you know, you really took the opportunity to be selfish, and I want you to take the time right now to kind of explain your kind of excommunication.
The shunning, the great satanic shunning.
From the Church of Satan and how you feel about it now.
Well, it was if you look in a historical perspective, it was the hysterical woman. They're like, he's on drugs. He's crazy. He's been crazy all along. And I'm like, you people are having this ritual. You have fucking like Time Magazine and all the major press, and you're saying these are the rituals we do. And these are the rituals that LaVey did to bring in the new satanic era and eon.
Why were you not okay with, and is that safe to say, why were you not okay with, or you felt that there was a reason to kind of express your voice of opposition towards that event?
They misrepresented. They presented it as these are the rituals we do, was one of the reasons. And then they got all fucking bent out of shape because I wore white and because they like covered the naked altar of the woman who's part of the satanic ritual. They cursed themselves. So it was a curse if I went into like the fucking.
It's shit like that. Why I personally, yes, LaVey and the Satanic Bible influenced me when I was. A wee lad of a woman, of a child.
A wee lass,
that's the word. Thank you. But, you know, Satanism to me has just been like my favorite party trick. Like I just pull it out and I use it when I'm trying to troll people, basically. Mm. I think that Satanism as itself is it's limiting itself. It is another ist. It's another ism. It's a rebellion reaction to this Christian.
It's not enough.
It's not enough. This thing is like, yes, that's a good stepping stone. And LaVey, what LaVey was doing was important in the time because it had not yet been addressed. But now, these modern day Satanists, it's like it's just fashion, and it's just it's not actually doing anything. It's not an evolution, and it's not a rebellion. It's conformity, you know.
Sure,
it's dogmatic.
So the you mentioned Peter Gilmore. It seems like you may have some.
He was never in Pink Floyd.
You may have some.
Music's not that good.
So you may have some.
He's not a very good writer.
It seems like you have some vitriolic opinions towards Peter Gilmore.
Well, he was a
successing successing after Anton LaVey.
Imagine,
and you knew Anton LaVey personally, so this may
be. He was a friend of mine. Imagine if you had this friend, and he was like total nerd, and like he knew all this great fucking knowledge about music and books and whatnot, and you hung out with him for years, and all of a sudden, like LaVey dies, and this friend is like the boss of you, and he's like, "Yeah, you can't say that." That was like the token lefty in the church to say, they're like, "We're going to shut you up now."
Yeah.
Because we got business deal with like, yeah. And I don't even, like, I'm a big critic of like, you know, the whole left wing, politically correct Bay Area thing. So it's like funny.
Sure.
So it was like, I'm like, you people are like misrepresenting what LaVey was not an atheist. LaVey was like forward thinking. There's so much we don't know. He's like, learn from this. Liberate yourself and move forward. He didn't want anybody to be a slave to Satanism.
So some of the arguments from the... and I've talked to some of the priests of the Church of Satan recently. And they seem to have a sentiment that Anton LaVey, this was his intention just before he died. Like, if you read LaVey's writings, you know, he went from being a complete mystic, and then sometimes he had these atheistic kind of meanderings or these atheistic sentiments. And some say that, you know, at least in the defense of Peter Gilmore, this is the way that LaVey, close to his death, wanted the church to progress. It wanted to be the new atheism or the secular atheism. And Matt would have a lot to say about that. Satanism being the new atheism.
We've covered this topic quite a bit in the podcast.
But there's this idea that, you know, this was LaVey at, you know, close to his death. He wanted it to become this strong force of atheism.
No, you're wrong.
I'm not saying
that. I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah. Why are you happy to hear that?
Well, I'm happy to hear that, you know, Satanism is not mere atheism. I would hate for people to say that LaVey had some deathbed confessional that he flopped from kind of this, you know, theistic, or not theistic, but, you know.
Theistic's more, a strong word, man.
You know, well, okay, but you can't argue. I mean,
the world is more complex.
Half the book is rituals. Half the book is supernatural.
Yeah, half of the Satanic Bible is Enochian. Right.
So I would personally, you know, take offense to somebody, all of a sudden he's an atheist, you know, it's nonsense.
So we could talk rhetoric and we could talk dogma. But
there's ambiguity with LaVey's beliefs.
That's intentional, and we could go on, and other people go like, you're lying, or it's bullshit, but real history is like oral history and the stories. So the story I have is, Peter Gilmore, when we were still friends before he was the boss of me.
Were you not in the Circle of Nine?
No, I was too young for that.
Okay.
Yeah, right after.
Because I thought, for some reason, I thought that you were part of that, like, the Order of the Trapezoid, the ruling order.
I was 2 days late on that story in my life. So when people ask me, like, I don't really have any, like, gripe with Peter Gilmore other than like,
but you shit on his book.
Yeah, that was,
you took
that
a shit
was
on
my,
his book and you said that as review. Your MySpace profile.
And the publisher actually was all right with that. My book review was because he promised me he was writing the script.
You're talking about Adam Satanic Scripts.
No,
Chris, was that Feral
Chris
House?
X. Chris X. Adversary Records. Okay. He put out the Satanic Scriptures because Gilmore told me he was writing the Satanic Scriptures, and when it came out, it was just like old essays he published in the Black Flame.
Sure.
So the story I like to tell anybody, because I don't Gilmore, whatever. But, you know, it's like I'm happy. Like I had was friends with him back in the day, and now he's like on his own trip. But the story that Gilmore told me he did not understand LaVey. And he knew LaVey even before I did. So
what do you mean that he told you he didn't understand LaVey?
In a story that Gilmore told me.
Personally.
He's like, Peggy and I went to San Francisco to visit the doctor and Blanche. And on the first night, we're like, hey, where should we go eat? And LaVey was like, Olive Garden. And Gilmore was like,
I heard about this.
That's so that down market.
Like Olive Garden and Burger King. That was like his two he's favorite.
Like, he's like, no, we are the elite.
Was it the breadsticks though?
We are the late. We are the elite. No, that's so fucking suburban. Like, no, not Olive Garden.
That
no, we're going
dip,
to the
though.
Olive Garden.
That cheese dip.
And the breadsticks and the cheese dip. And the romaine of iceberg lettuce and the
endless
ranch
pasta.
Drink.
Did that exist back then? Probably not.
So, and Gilmore's like, okay, so I was a gentleman and I went to Olive Garden with. Wait, let me do the Peter Gilmore voice.
Yeah, let's do it.
And the next night, I was like, LaVey, please. Where shall we eat? What shall we do? I'm so hungry.
Oh, no.
And LaVey's like, Olive Garden. And Gilmore was like, no, but LaVey, that is not where the elite eats. No.
But in your opinion, would LaVey be okay with Peter Gilmore's appointment as the high priest of the Church of Satan?
No. No. As far as my friendship with LaVey and my point of view, no. He under no circumstances would he have Peter like run the show.
So you'd be turning in his grave, pretty much.
He'd be like turning like shit in his grave, yeah.
I want to kind of change direction a bit. I want to discuss the condition of political identity in the West. There seems to be a sedentary response to politics. There's an apathy and cynicism toward not only politics, but religion in general. And
rightly so.
I want to know, amongst the American people, it almost seems like a crippling effect in the West. And I want to know, how do you respond to that in your work? Do you acknowledge that that's an element of our
that's what art war is?
It's a medium. No, it's good. It's beautiful.
Well, art war is fighting against that. Art war is fighting against that.
Because we talked about hipsters earlier. In private, we talked about hipsters.
That just means...
And that's a term...
It just means,
and that's a term
it means a lot of people are dropping the ball, and we got the platform, and
but this idea of in the wake of in atheism being widespread, and there's a high doubt that's kind of ubiquitous.
I like that. High doubt.
That's being ubiquitous through almost every aspect of Western culture.
Yes, but that's good. It's a cycle. I mean, something needs to fucking
change.
But
in the way, you know, one of my favorite poets says, "Cynicism is the end of intelligence."
No.
Not
so
in
the
no,
idea,
no, no, not, no. Not now.
Can,
not in the 21st
you can
century.
Be very intelligent.
I can't believe I have
it's maybe the end of hope.
What I just said.
You're completely wrong.
You're wrong.
Wrong.
No, I think.
God damn it!
It's the expression of the end of hope.
Yeah, and hope sucks.
You're celebrating.
We're going to the next level.
Everyone here is celebrating cynicism?
Yeah, because it's a cycle. You leave the past behind,
then
you go to the next fucking thing that's going to happen.
I wouldn't say I celebrate cynicism, but
constructive.
It's definitely... I like to use it constructively, and I'm not all about it, but there's definitely a point for it. It's just... You have to... It's balance. If everything you do becomes cynicism...
Then it's all a joke.
Yeah.
But you can't take everything you do seriously.
Dead. Then you gave up completely. Mm. So
don't indulge too much in it, but use it in a creative way.
I see a vein of, or at least an element of destruction of your own work after it is completed. Now, I saw that with Steven Johnson Leyba, I saw that with Miss Haddix here, and I saw that with Janelle. The idea that you create a work and then you destroy it after it's done. Now, this is a vein that has existed within artistic world for a long time. The idea of destroying your own work so that you can start again. And I'm sure Luis probably has a relation to that, and I want you to expound on that in a moment. But I want to get your relationship to this process, and I want to understand where it comes from. The idea of destroying your own work, destroying, you know, something that may be sacred to you. I want to get where it comes from, and I'll start with Leyba.
The artist is not important. The artist is the vehicle. So it's the artist creates, and it's the artifact of the art. So it's what you do, what you create. Art is the manifestation. The personality is the vehicle. So what you create is more important than the personality. What you create is an artifact. So the most important thing is the act of creating.
The process is the product.
Are you saying that
our forefathers
making
have
the
said,
art is more important wait, than
wait, wait.
The
You're
artifact
not appealing
or
to
the
forefathers.
The process is the
founding
product
fathers
because I know Leyba wouldn't appeal to forefathers.
Founding fathers of this country, yeah.
That's not my
They believed
quote.
In the manifestation of will.
Okay.
And the most important thing was what you manifest.
Sure.
So it wasn't the personality, and the artifact is just the vehicle. The most important thing is the act of creating.
The action, the doing, the being, experiencing.
Sure. Is there something to do with the idea of becoming your own adversary? Now, I know LeVay would... I keep calling you LeVay. I know Leyba...
Thank you.
Fuck.
What an honor.
I know Leyba would say that there is an aspect of becoming your own adversary that is a... You know, I know you'd probably fully embrace that.
Yes.
Now, I
want
to ask Hannah and Janelle and Louise if there's an element of that as
because
well.
Because you're not important.
Well, also...
And the artist is not important, and the art's not important. The act of creation is the most important.
If you take it to a ritual magic... standpoint, like the creation of sigils, for example.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You create these sigils and you charge them and then you must destroy them and get rid of them.
Turn them into ashes and then forget about them.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it sends a bit to your subconscious and it plays out into the world. So that's the same way with creations. Yes, we as artists, we create these things, and in the moment, it's raw and it's real and it's total expression.
Sure.
And then we see the finished works, and then we sometimes get caught up in like
and
the
she's
ego.
holding a book that that contains the Nestle Death Curse.
Nestle Death Curse
in a physical form.
The
she picks it up,
sigil,
sure.
And it's then we take this glory of this finished product and we put all of our ego in it and we look back and we say, wow, I created that. Mm-hmm. And that is the thing. But we must get back. We must remember that the thing that is important is not the thing that we can hang on our wall or in the galleries
or on the walls
of the people who buy the art. But to get back to the fact that the creative process.
Create.
Of course. Janelle, how do you feel about that? The idea of sacrificing your work after having performed it and having put out the energy for it. I mean...
Mm-hmm. No, I feel that way too. I have a really hard time. I can't watch video footage or anything after I've done shows.
You told me something about that in private.
Yeah.
I mean, if I may say, you said that... Mm-hmm. I just kind of choose to turn it to ashes and then forget about it.
Because in the
So you're hearkening to what Hannah said.
Yeah,
I mean, you're referencing what Hannah said about
like
the idea
magic.
That you turn it to ashes and you walk away from it. To know, to will, to dare, and to keep silent. So the idea that you're going to create a magical act and you're going to walk away from it.
Because for me, it's not about me and watching it over and over and looking at me. It's not that. It's the effect that it had on the audience or just the intentions of it. That's what matters the most. I know I did it. I know what happened. And I hope that people that witnessed it carried something from it. And I hope the intentions are carried through and the power of those intentions are alive and well. And I move on.
You know, okay. I feel like I have an analog to offer for my own personal work and personal life.
Sure, sure. Could we get Louise and then you can give your...
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, for me, the creating the art is the most fulfilling part for me. It is it's a form of meditation. And I can lose myself in it, and then it's important to let go of the art. Sometimes it's best to have it destroyed as a ritual. Other times I think it is good to give it away and let it go so that it can live on away and infect other people. But it is important to let go, no matter if you destroy it or if you give it away, if you sell it, whatever, as long as it goes out into the universe.
But you've had a sense of permanency because you released Flesh Art, which is a book.
Yeah.
And the book that's out there forever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this idea of creating and then destroying and then walking away, that may not be fully the case.
No, not with everything.
We don't destroy all of the creation.
There's the important thing is letting go. Like, I don't want to sit on my books. I want to make sure that they're all over the vault. And sometimes it is best to destroy the piece as a form of a ritual within the performance. And other times it's best to give it away or let it go in another way. But important is that you don't hold on to it.
We'll start around the table. It's been an excellent discussion, a fantastic discussion. I thank all of you for being here. But let's go along through the table and kind of anything of your private projects or things that you want to kind of express, your primary forms of expression. I'll start with Louise Fleischauer. What's going on that you would like our audience to be familiar with?
Part of it, we haven't spoken about are the human instruments that I use in my rituals. The idea is that whatever we can feel, experience on stage, the pain and the euphoria gets translated into sound. And for this, I use hooks connected with springs and microphones, or sometimes we read the brain.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but when you say springs,
metal coils
that are inserted into the flesh.
They are connected to a hook, and the hook is inserted into the flesh.
So they're in line. They're in line, Shay.
Yes. So if you when you hit the spring,
fascinating,
you can feel it on your. You can feel it, but you can also hear it.
Almost like the chord of a cello.
Have you created music using this medium?
Oh, yes. That's what I do all the time. That's what I do in my live rituals and in the and my releases, CD releases. A lot of it is based on those sounds and I just manipulate it.
Janelle, do you have anything?
I have a shitty Facebook page for Virgo Rising. It's facebook.com/Virgo.rising.
And Virgo Rising is kind of a personal, but that's kind of a personal project,
it is,
right?
Yeah,
it's kind of an aspect of your own.
Yeah, it's my collective work or just Virgo Rising projects that aren't super often as they should be, but I work with two other performance groups. So the next best thing is coming to the Nestle Death Curse at Lethal Amounts, October 17th.
October 17th at Lethal Amounts, of course. Hannah Haddix?
Well, you know, I'm not big on self-promotion, I suppose.
Well, this is the format to do so.
But if you would like to add me on Facebook, Hannah Haddix, you can see what we create. Message me personally, and I will add you to the Kyoto Collage Society. I'm not so much into you checking my creations out, but for you to personally explore your own creative nature, that is what I want to propagate. And put into the world is not what I create, but what you create and how you influence things.
It's Stephen Leyva. You guys have a CD that you're releasing at the event on Saturday?
Total Chiral, hashtag Art War.
What's the name of
Ad Nauseam.
Absolutely. And for those who are local to the area, once again, that's Lethal Amounts here in Los Angeles. Check it out. It's going to be on October 17th.
It's going to be really
bloody. Please go there. If you don't go there and receive an immense transformation of the spirit, you're probably already dead. Yeah. Or you're an executive of Nestle.
Also, bring cash because we are selling art and you need to buy these pieces.
Absolutely. And you're going to have works that are available at the show?
Yes.
Yes, original artworks.
Covered in menstrual blood and sigils and intents on
and
chocolate
gold.
And gold. We're going to be selling personally sigilized golden tickets, part of the program part of this program that you can tear off and write your own death curse, put your own bodily fluids onto it, your blood, your spit, your pubic hair, your tears, your cum, whatever you want.
Absolutely.
Just even your words, just sigil, whatever you want, anything, any hatred you have for Nestle, any ripple that you want to send into the everything, the energy fields of destroying this corporation, we invite you to do so. You know, if you can't afford to buy these things, we're not going to hold it against you, but you better scream, die, Nestle, die, when we call you.
Die, Nestle, die.
Die, die.
Oh, and you can also buy flesh art at the event, too.
Fantastic. Okay.
Basically, just come to the death curse. If you can't be there and you want to buy the pieces, we are putting them on Facebook as we complete the pieces, and they are for sale before the show. You can reserve your piece. You can send us PayPal. Just get in touch at labaart@gmail.com as well as alienbroadcast@gmail.com. You can send us PayPal funds all day long. And even if you don't want to buy these pieces because maybe you're a little bit spooked about the curse that we're doing, if you can get behind this death curse.
No one is spooked by it. I think everyone who's of any reason should be behind it.
I've had many people. Actually, our venue got changed from Glitter Death to Lethal Amounts because of a spook about the term of
Shay and I had to move studios one time.
Yeah, we've had to do that before. So it's been a sincere privilege to have Stephen Johnson Leyba, Hannah Haddix, Luis Fleischauer, and Janelle Mastema in the studio today. Please, if you are in the LA area, please make an attempt to come out to the performance that's going to be at Lethal Amounts this Saturday, October 17th.
Woo!
Other than that,
Barring
do
hell.
What you're told, do what thou wilt.
Follow your satanic leader.
Thank you for listening.
Hail. Die, Nestle, die!
Die, Nestle, die, die, die!
Thank you for listening and lending your ears to the Deferred Gnosis podcast.
Please use the contact information in the description below. You may reach us at deferredgnosis.com. You may also find us on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, iTunes, etc. Or reach us by email at deferredgnosis@gmail.com.
Please send us your topic ideas, suggestions, things you might want us to discuss. Help us carve out a niche of truth, reaching some ground just on the edge of the fringe. And if you're a musician, a writer, poet, artist of any kind, please feel free to send us a link to your work, audio or otherwise. We'd be more than happy to plug your work and possibly interview you for the show.
But remember, we have a penchant for the subversive, so the darker, the better.
Thank you for listening.
And highest cheers from Deferred Gnosis.
Ave, hails, as above, so below.
He's going to wage total war on you.
Do you want
he's going to do Stephen Johnson
not just
late,
gay,
but death curse.
But more severe? Do you want?
Yeah.
Total queer?
I thought it
better go calm all over, guys.